The PT Pintcast is powered by International Service Learning. For over 22 years, International Service Learning has been leading volunteers to 12 different countries to provide physical therapy services for those in need. They believe in the power of the individual that chooses to serve and make a difference in the lives of others. They have opportunities in Costa Rica, Belize, Mexico, the Dominican Republic, and many more locations around the globe. For more information about volunteering, visit islonline.org.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, here we go for another episode of the PT Pintcast. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Another person who shares a passion of my own today on the show. He is a semi-professional triathlete. That's all you have to do is mention triathlon and my ears go up. He is currently a 2012 Olympian, currently double world champion in cycling, world record holder in the 10,000 meters on the track, multiple African record holder, and winner of the Berlin Marathon for the fourth year in a row. He's currently also world number one ranked in cycling and multiple events more than 800 meters in racing. And his greatest achievement, though, is being a first at something in Ironman. I want to welcome to the show Peter Dupria. Peter, welcome to the Pintcast.
Thanks so much, Jimmy. Thanks for the opportunity.
The first question is always the hardest. So what are we drinking today?
Well, I'm drinking a craft beer. It's one of my friend's first attempts of making their own homemade craft beer. And his name's Hendrik, so he calls it Henny's Lager. So that's what I'm going with today.
That's awesome. You must like him a lot. You're taking your life into your own hands trying someone else's home brew.
Yeah, I know. But luckily, I did give it a sneak sip just before we started, just
right,
to make sure.
Perfect. I am actually on a Christmas break. I'm home in upstate New York, so I am going with a local brew. So this one's from Glens Falls, New York. It's from the Davidson Brothers Brewing Company. It's just called BRN. It's one of their brown ales. So cheers to South Africa from the United States.
Awesome, man. Cheers.
So I kind of gave you a little bit of an introduction, but I left out a few key components because I wanted you to tell your own story. So all the things I said were true, but I left out a little bit of a detail. So I want you to tell people what I kind of left out.
Yes. So, I mean, all those things are true, except for the fact that I'm actually a quadriplegic. At that, I'm a C6 level quadriplegic, so functionally level C6. So explain it a little bit. There's four categories in wheelchair sports, wheelchair racing and parasports. Two of those categories are quadriplegic classes. So I am in the lowest class, so the class with the least muscle function that you can get. So functionally, what muscles do I have? C6 quadriplegic basically means I only have wrist extension, so lifting up my wrists, bicep muscles, and full shoulder muscles. The key muscles I don't have, obviously everything from my chest down, there's no movement. Got no hand or finger movement at all, and I've got no triceps either. So, roughly if you equate that in percentages, I've literally got around 15%, 1/5, of what an able body would have in terms of muscle movement.
Wow. And just to reiterate, in case people were a little bit lost because your list of achievements was quite long, you are the first quadriplegic in the world to ever finish an Ironman triathlon.
That's correct, Joe.
And I want to go through that because I've done an Ironman triathlon. I know what goes into getting ready for it. I know how long a day that is. And you have 17 hours to do it. So you've got the swim is a 3.8 kilometer ocean swim. That's 2.4 mile swim in the ocean, which is a different game. It's not a pool swim. It's not a lake.
Yes.
You got 180 kilometers on the bike. That's 112 miles. And then you've got a 42.2 kilometer run. That's a full marathon, 26.2 miles run or push. And that is a long day.
That's a long day. Yes. And I mean, the amazing thing about it also is that for the para athletes that races, there's no special treatment. We need to make the same cutoffs that the able bodies have to make. Actually, intermittent cutoffs, one after the swim, one after the bike and swim, and then obviously the 17-hour overall.
Just for the non-triathletes out there, they say if you can't get done with the swim or the bike at a certain time, you're probably not going to be able to finish the race by the 17-hour cutoff. What is the cutoff for the swim?
So the swim cutoff is 2 hours 20, and then the bike and the swim together, the cutoff is 10 and a half hours, and then overall it's 17 hours.
So you didn't just do this Ironman once?
No, I did it three times.
Three times.
funniest part about it is first one I did, which made it more of a miracle now that I think of it after the last one I did, was that 6 weeks before I broke my forearm, and I broke it badly. It's not just a hairline fracture. It was broken in three pieces. So a plate got put in. My arm was in a cast for 2 weeks. So the cast only came off 4 weeks out.
Wow.
I mean, it was just an amazing journey. You know, I'm a man of faith as well. And yeah, you know, it's just incredible that I did it in the time that I actually did in the end as well. You know,
so. Yeah. Well, that's what grabbed my attention. My roommate, Matt Barrick, found one of your videos online and just kind of explaining your story. And it was probably like a 2 or 3 minute video. And I just stood there and watched that. And I immediately tweeted at you. And I was like, we got to get this guy on the show. So that kind of told your story through the race. I wanted to go back and start in 2003. And what kind of brought you through this journey? So do you want to go back to that?
Yeah. So throughout my life, sport was a big thing. You know, so I mean, I was always pretty good and, you know, had very big ambitions in my sport. So, you know, I participated for my country age group in triathlon already as a junior. Well, I made the South African students team in cycling and triathlon as well while at varsity. I studied actuarial science at varsity, and then I did my honours in investment management. And yeah, I mean, I enjoy my culture. You know, I think my parents brought us up. I've got two brothers, and they brought us up to live a balanced lifestyle. You know, I think I managed to do that. And I mean, I had my aspirations of the Olympics and those type of things, you know. So for me, I thought everything was on the right track. Yeah, and then came 6 October 2003, when most people thought, except for one person, luckily that was me, that all my dreams were shattered. So I was actually out cycling. It's an ironic story. I had a bit of a hamstring niggle, and a friend of mine told me about a chiropractor that I should go to. So I had to do 60 k's of training on the bike that morning. So I decided I'm going to cycle to the chiropractor and back, because they were 30 k's away. And then on my way to the chiropractor to get my spine in alignment, a car didn't see me and knocked my spine completely out of alignment. So quite ironic. Anyway, yeah, and then, I mean, I ended up in hospital. I mean, it was amazing though. You know, I was lying on the tar, face down. At that point, I couldn't move anything except my head. So I knew my neck was injured. I don't know whether it'd be permanent or not, but, and yeah, you know, I just directed everybody what to do, who to phone. I could still breathe then. And yeah, I mean, the lady got out of the car and she thought a rock hit the car. And then she saw the bike, and then she just started crying and screaming, running towards me. And I just immediately forgave her as well, because accidents happen, you know. And I said, it was just by grace of God that I was so calm that everything happened as it did. Ended up in ICU for 42 days, of which 32 days was on a ventilator. And after 32 days ventilator, I started breathing by myself. And yeah, I think it was about 49 days I was finally sent to rehab as a C6 quadriplegic, having to learn how to do everything, you know, from scratch, basically. So
you sound very, very positive. And some of the videos that you've put online that have been made about you have some really great quotes. And I want to make sure I get some of those out there. Yours is, "Our greatest fear is not the impossible. It is the possible." It's very inspirational. Were you this positive while you were going through that? Because that's got to be hard.
Yeah, you know, that's why, you know, a lot of people say you got a second chance in life and it's weird for them. But my story is different. You know, for me, I don't believe that I got a second chance in life. I believe I lived my life to the full before, you know, and I was positive, which is probably a good trait. And look, I was no angel. I'm a Christian. But definitely I feel my faith also saved me a bloody big role. For me, I've just, since my accident, just carried on. You know, it wasn't a second chance. I'm just still living my life to the full and going as hard as I can. There's another video called Still Running, because running for me was really my favorite thing before my accident as well. Even now, when I hit push rims and everything and the technique's just smooth, I still enjoy the push, which is the running, mm-hmm. in a race day, the most, you know. So that's why, you know, for me, I'm still running. And yeah, you know, for most people, it's hard to believe that you haven't had one bad day because you're sitting in a wheelchair. You know, and all I can say is, look, you don't have to believe me, but, you know, I've got a lot of people that knew me before my accident, people that only met me after the accident, and they can 100% vouch for that. And I mean, one of them will be my wife, who I only met after my accident as well. You know, for me, amazing grace from above. You know?
What was rehab like? How intensive was your physical therapy?
So, look, I must say, again, you know, a C6 squad, most of the times they'll just say, well, you'll be able to do a couple of things yourself and you'll need some tools and equipment and cuffs to hold a fork, etc. And maybe you'll put your shirt on and maybe one or two other things, but you can't be independent. You're always going to need help. And that was just the attitude of my occupational physical therapists at the rehab. And for me, I just, you know, whether I was in denial, then I'm still in denial today, which worked for me, obviously. But I didn't believe that. So you know, I think I was my OT's first quadriplegic that she dealt with. So essentially, I think I taught her more than she taught me in terms of what to do and how to figure out to do stuff, because most of the stuff I wanted to do, she just said, well, you can't do it. You know, so, you know, for me, it was twofold. I mean, I had to learn what this body of mine was about suddenly now, because some things that people don't know about quadriplegic and paras or spinal cord injuries is that you suddenly lose control over your bowel and your bladder as well. So you're back on nappies and those type of things, catheters and leg bags and those type of things. And you need to know, you know, how and get yourself into a rhythm and understand how you're going to deal with that and live with that. I mean, now you, obviously 6 months later, I wasn't on nappies or any of those things. I self-catheterize now, those type of things, which is also something that doctors said, well, you don't have your hand function, so you can't do a lot of things again. But yeah, you know, so for me, you know, I remember it very well. But for me, the greatest guy in my rehab was really my physio, because he sort of, even though I think he didn't really believe that I was going to do what I said I was going to do, he was willing to give it a bash and try a lot of stuff with me.
Yeah.
You know? And the amazing thing, you know, it's not like he just said, well, it's not possible, so sorry, I'm not even going to try. He let me try stuff, you know. So, but I mean, it was a great learning curve and a stepping stone. But I mean, by the time I got home, I was still weak, and I mean, I still had a lot to learn. But I mean, I couldn't even transfer from my chair to my bed or bed to the chair by myself. Even coming from lying into sitting on the bed, like you need to do that stuff to get dressed,
right.
You know, was very hard. It was really when I got home, it was like almost then I had my freedom to do what I wanted to do and as much as I wanted to do, you know, that I really started to get my independence and go for it. You know?
Yeah, I can imagine, like you had said a minute ago, you're now in this body, you've got to figure out what it's able to do. I just finished up taking neurorehabilitation, which is where we learn about spinal cord injuries and strokes. And I'll be honest, if I were to answer the questions about what a seasick tetraplegic would be able to do, having known you, I'd fail, because they tell us they're going to be able to do certain things and not, and you are the exception to the rule.
Exactly, you know, and that's the thing for me, you know. I go to rehabs nowadays and show people what I can do. But it's a lot of hard work. And I mean, because I do a lot of sport, I'm power to weight, I'm exceptionally strong, even though my arms are thin, because it doesn't, you don't have the triceps.
Right.
Everybody's, well, your arms are small and you do the Ironman. How do you do it? You know, the key thing for me is that people realize that they can live a quality life. And whether they want to go all the way like I did, or whether they only want to go halfway, as long as they live a quality life, you know, there's a couple of things I feel you need to do by yourself if you've got my muscle function level. And then the rest is up to you. It's your decision. As long as you live happily with people helping you, there's no issues with it. You know, that's the key thing for me.
Yeah. So you left ICU after how long? 43 days?
It was actually around 49 days, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So then you go from there, you go to rehabilitation, do OT, PT.
Yes.
And how long are you in there before you're discharged?
So I was discharged after about 12 weeks. So I got out of rehab 23 February 2004. And I mean, also just worth mentioning, you know, obviously all these things I say now as well, our rehabs is still a bit different to what you'll find in America. And also just with the medical aid and those things, you know, we don't spend as much time, I think, as tetras or quadriplegics should spend in a rehab, purely because there's not enough money. So, you know, I do believe the system you guys have there and the rehabs you've got there, I don't want to say, oh, it's so much better, but I just think for quadriplegics, it's better because you need time to build up the strength and the muscle to be able to do certain things, you know. And as I said, by the time I got home, I wasn't nearly as strong as I am now. And that the fact that I am so strong now makes me able to a lot of this.
Sure. Were you given a good home program from your physio down there when you were discharged? Something to continue to do?
Yeah, not necessarily really any specific program, you know, other than one or two things that we had done. But I mean, luckily, again, as I say, for me, the way my head works, I was a sportsman, you know, everything just fell into place. So, you know, I'm an actuarial analyst currently at Deloitte, and the actuaries find solutions to problems. So for me, it was like a challenge, and it's almost like I enjoy the challenge of figuring out stuff. And that's why it sounds funny. I mean, it's a traumatic event. You're suddenly quadriplegic, your life's over in most people's eyes. But for me, I actually saw it as a challenge and fun. And again, like I always say, when bad thing happens, the opportunity to be great. Me, all that stuff was just resonating in the back of my mind as I went through that journey of getting independent.
So now you're discharged from PT, you go home, and you said you weren't as strong as you wanted to be. So what was the goal? Was the goal return to sport? Was the goal a specific race or a distance? Or what was the driving force there?
I mean, look, I went home, and as I said, I was busy with my honors when the accident happened. At my varsity at that point, you catch your degree or the actual ceremonies in April, the year after you got your degree. So I was planning to get my degree with my classmates. So my first port of call was to get my honours written. So I actually, 2 weeks after I got home, I wrote my honours exams. So those first 2 weeks, I was just studying and focusing on just studying in so that I can actually go and do the exams. So, I mean, already in rehab, I started with that. But yeah, so then after that, yes, you know, the goal was twofold. So first of all, I wanted to, obviously, I said I was going to be independent. So I was going to be working on my independence. And I always said I'll give myself a year to get completely independent and drive, etc., before I'll start looking for a proper job in actuarial science again. It was twofold because sport was a big part of my life, you know, and I had big aspirations beforehand. It was just then I needed to figure out what sports is there for us. So I have to say I started with wheelchair rugby or murder ball, and I started with that like a week after I got home.
Oh, wow.
So I was already told about it in rehab, and my wife, which was then just a friend of mine, she's also an occupational therapist. She wasn't mine and she wasn't in my rehab, but she was a friend of my brother's, and that's how I got to know her afterwards. But yeah, she told me about it, so she already knew the guys and, you know, got me in it, you know, as I got home. So, but the seed about doing an Ironman was planted in rehab already. My coach now, you know, then before my accident, we used to train together. He's actually an Ironman legend in South Africa. He's come in the top 10, I think, 5 times at Kona.
What's his name? Got a name drop.
Reinhard Tissink. So his best position at Kona was 5th in 2010.
Wow.
I don't even know if you watched that one, but he pulled Mecca. That was the second Iron Wars, basically.
Right.
He pulled Macca. You know, he made the break and Macca went with him. And I think if he didn't make that break, Macca wouldn't have won that Ironman.
But wow.
All debatable. But anyway, I'm proud of my coach.
So. Good.
But yeah, he already in rehab brought me a video of paraplegics that did the Ironman. You know, that sort of planted the seed of me saying, but hey, maybe I can be the first quad to do a triathlon. At that point, I wasn't sure whether Ironman would be possible, but, you know, that was the start already in rehab.
So everything went well with the degree. You got that settled. And were you able to hit that goal of being independent within a year?
Yeah. Other than the fact of getting a car with hand controls, I probably would have hit it before a year. I finally got my car. I actually remember the date, you know, it was, I think, 14 February, Valentine's Day, 2005. But by then I was already driving, yeah. So, I mean, you know, and then obviously the only other thing was starting to put your wheelchair in the car yourself, et cetera, right. Those type of things.
Which we learned just this semester is not, I'm using air quotes now, not possible unless you have that C7, unless you have that tri-strip strength. But you just found a way. It was a puzzle. Like you said, you're an actuary. It's a puzzle. You figure it out.
Yes, no, exactly. Look, I mean, if I tell you all the things I can do, and I promise you I do not have tricep. If you talk about muscle grade, my left is a 2 and my right is a 2+. I can't even lift it up against gravity. So that's how weak they are. But there is a little bit, obviously. Look, I have to tell you this story. You know, because of sport beforehand, our timing and watch and stopwatch and timing yourself is a big thing. So when I got home, I said, okay, I figured out I'll put on my socks and everything separately. And, you know, you can imagine no finger or hand movement, putting a sock on by yourself, no tools. And that's the other thing. I use absolutely no tools either. It's all just my hands as they are. And then I said, okay, I'm going to time myself getting fully dressed and see how long that takes me. And the first time I did it, it took me 51 minutes. And, I mean, I was dead tired. Then I just said, okay, I can't do that every day. It's not functional. So I'm going to make my time that I want to go for 15 minutes, 1:05, and that'll be functional. So there was a lady with me in the first year, and I said, you know, Onie Marks gets it going. I could see she was laughing in the beginning, this guy timing himself. But then 2 weeks later, she started cheering me on, because as I hit 15 minutes, then I stop and then she can dress me. And after 2 weeks, I was getting closer and closer to that 15-minute mark of being fully dressed. And then, you know, I think it was about 2 months later, I opened my eyes and I hit it fully dressed 15 minutes. And then I said, I'm not going to stop it there. I'm going to make my impossible world record barrier time for getting dressed 7 minutes. Because as I saw myself getting faster, timing, you know, it motivated me, because it meant I was getting better at living life as a quad. So, I mean, I started timing everything, getting into the car, everything, washing, getting out of the bath, toilets, going from there to eat. Anyway, I thought I'd never get to 7 minutes. It's impossible. And a month later, I opened my eyes, under 12, under 10. And I think it was about 3 or 4 months after I started that I opened my eyes, and there I was, under 7 minutes, fully dressed. Now, that is like socks, shoes, underpants, pants, and then from there into my chair, I put my shirt on while I'm in the chair. So, you know, that's faster than most women.
That's fast. That's faster than all women.
But the amazing thing is now I don't tie myself anymore, you know, but every now and then I do go for a record. And currently my record for getting dressed is 2 minutes and 41 seconds.
I can't get dressed in 2 minutes and 41 seconds.
And I mean, it's all tricks. The thing is, you know, for me, that was what taught me that, again, you know, like nothing is impossible. You know, like you think, yes, you know, it's just impossible to dress that fast. But through tricks and this and that, you know, anything is possible.
Wow. So, from 51 minutes to 2 minutes and 41 seconds.
Exactly. You know, and that's functional. You know, that's functional.
Yeah, you're using a lot of these words that, like, my professors would be excited. You're using words like independent and functional, and you know your condition very, very well. You're able to cite the percentage of muscle function, and I'm seeing a lot of parallels from some of the videos that I saw. Being an actuary, it's about numbers. And then if anybody isn't a triathlete, triathletes, we're weird about all these numbers, how fast we do. We time in triathlon how long it takes us to get dressed with the transitions and how fast it goes from, you know, from swim to bike and bike to run. So numbers, I can see being a really good motivating factor for someone like you.
Yeah, you know, that's why I like living a life of being a double agent. On the one side, I'm an actuary with numbers, but then on the other side, just living life and everything I do in sport, I'm doing numbers as I go. You know, even when I train, when I race, you know, like calculating times and averages and that stuff, I think I quite like to, a lot of times with training, when I'm training on my own, don't have all the fields on my computer that it can have, so that I calculate it myself to keep myself busy. Stupid things like that, but yeah, numbers play a very big role.
Yeah, triathletes, we're weird because we'll do stuff like that, because we do. I mean, when you train for anything, it doesn't matter really what distance triathlon, we got a lot of time out there. And if you're not playing mind games, you start to go a little bit nuts.
Exactly. But I suppose we're probably already nuts to start off with, but yeah.
Yeah, believe me, when my friends found out I was looking to do an Ironman, they're just kind of looking at me like, why would you do that? There's cars and boats, man.
Yeah, I know, exactly, you know, so.
All right, so I want to take a quick 60-second break. When we come back, I want to go through all of those things I listed in your intro and how you got into them, the different sports that you're doing, the records that you hold. I want to talk about a little bit of the challenges within the sport, the quadriplegics, a little bit of discrimination going on there, and just talk more about where you are now and where you're going to go on to. So we'll be back in 60 seconds on the PT Pintcast with Peter Dupriet.
We got to go pay some student loans. We'll be right back.
Humanity's greatest advances are not in its discoveries, but in how those discoveries are applied to reduce inequity.
Doing what's never been done before is intellectually seductive.
We all need to contribute. Me, you, we. It is our duty.
With international service learning, travel to a new part of the world, learn the skills to help others, and serve those in need. Visit ISLonline.org for more.
Taking IPAs over TKAs. It's the PT Pintcast.
And we're back on the PT Pintcast, still talking with Peter Dupriet. You can find him on Twitter, and I suggest you do. It is at SupaPete. That's at SupaPiet. And he's nice enough to talk to us. What city are you in South Africa right now?
I live in Johannesburg, so it's in the high veldts. And yeah, I must say, we've been having heat wave after heat wave here. So it's incredibly hot, even for Joburg, you know. So
thanks for rubbing it in. It's currently 32 degrees where I sit right now.
And that is in Fahrenheit. So with us, it's 32 degrees Celsius.
Well, all right. So we're talking a little bit about what brought you to the point that you needed rehab back in 2003, C6 quadriplegic. You got yourself some goals in terms of being independent within a year. You talked about timing yourself from getting dressed, going from 51 minutes to 2 minutes and 41 seconds as your world record. And that's your world record. But you've got some other world records in some different sports. It doesn't seem like you're slowing down at all. So why don't we talk about some of these highlights?
Sure. You know, also, I mean, I didn't go from zero to Ironman in 1 year. So, I mean, it was already planted in rehab, as we said, and it took me about 10 years to get there. So, but yeah, I mean, look, I started off with wheelchair rugby, as I said, and I made the South African team with that within the first year of playing wheelchair rugby. But I mean, I always knew I wanted to go into my individual sports. So I played wheelchair rugby until about 2008. And yeah, I mean, the guys here, I think they're working harder now, but, you know, they just weren't that committed. You know, some of the guys thought you get in the chair and you go to Paralympics, there you go. You know, they didn't put in the hard work, and that did frustrate me a bit. But yeah, luckily with individual sports, that's not needed. So I mean, I did start swimming. The cool thing for me was also like hand cycling. There wasn't really hand bikes for us when I started asking around about it, etc. So I mean, I went through the evolution of hand bikes. You know, actually now, like one of the manufacturers, Top End, they actually used my quad adaptions they actually have that as a quad solution as on part of their order forms.
And I just wanted to clear some things up for some people who might not be triathletes or might not be familiar with some of the equipment. So we'll start with the bike, the hand bike. So now it's not a wheelchair, it's a hand bike. So essentially you're operating what would be the pedals with the feet, you're operating those with your hands, and you can use gears while you're on the bike portion of the triathlon course.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, the gears I have is the same as you guys. I mean, all of it's just the same stand. I use SRAM XX and Red Mix, and, I mean, yeah, shifting, etc. The paras would shift with their fingers, obviously, because I have them, and on the handles is much easier. And they do the brakes with their hands, obviously, as well. For us, because we can't move our fingers at all, a lot of guys have their hands strapped on the handles or special adaptions. You know, I've got my own custom adaptions on my handles, and I do the brakes and the gears with my elbows.
You're in a pretty much a recumbent position. You're kind of lying feet forward.
Yes, exactly, yeah. It's you know, most people like cycling past you say, oh, that looks so comfortable. It looks like you're going to fall asleep. Little do they know how you're cracking going up that hill, you know. But anyway.
When you switch to the run, you're using a standard, well, I shouldn't say standard, you're using a standard sport wheelchair.
Yeah, a racing wheelchair. And yeah, there's no gears. You've got one push remote that you push, and it's much harder because there is no gears. And you sit in like a kneeling position, a very uncomfortable position. Obviously, if you do it a lot, it gets comfortable. But I mean, it's never fully comfortable. And, you know, as a quad in South Africa, there was no one here to show me how to do any of that stuff, you know. So, and even the swim, the same story, you know. So I think an important thing for me to say to people is, if you want something, a dream or a goal, you need to make it happen. You know, you can't sit and wait for it to happen. It's not going to happen by itself. You need to make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, even if you need help from someone else, you can ask them or whatever, you can force them, but you need to make it happen.
Yeah. So. And then let's go to the swim, because I think this is a unique portion of the race. All right, so let's review it again. You've got biceps, you've got wrist extension, but from there on, you're pretty limited. So how do you manage a swim, especially in ocean conditions like an Ironman?
Yes, so I mean, luckily my shoulders are very strong. You know, so they pretty much as strong as you can get. I do a double arm backstroke, and I've actually got three different strokes that I swim. You know, one arm backstroke, but that's slow because you go like a snake in the water. And then I've got like a straight arm backstroke, which is my racing stroke, and then a stroke where I like bend my arm. So it's difficult to explain, but the point is just so it's sort of three different strokes that I've figured out for myself that I train with. But when I race, I use my straight arm. So it's almost like a butterfly, but on your back. We are allowed to wear wetsuits all the time. So, but I must say most races I've done has always been wetsuit legal races anyway for the able bodies anyway. So, you know, the wetsuit definitely helps with the buoyancy.
A little bit of buoyancy for your lower half, right?
I mean, I can swim without the wetsuit, no problems. But in the open water, I think it's quite dangerous because they're swallowing water. We can't cough. So swallowing water, it's very dangerous. People swimming over you, you know, open water swimming, drives chaos. So even though, like, all my Ironmans, I started with the pro women, you know, a little bit ahead of the age group, is when that wave comes, it still comes, you know.
Right. So. Yeah, no, that's intimidating. I mean, I've been a swimmer since I was a kid. I was an ocean lifeguard, consider myself pretty comfortable in the water. And then you get, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people barreling through, and not even intentionally, but swimming over you. That's intimidating.
No, definitely. You know, and I mean, luckily, because I did, you know, triathlon seriously before my accident, obviously that helped. But I have to say, my first try I did was Olympic distance in a dam, actually. And that was horrific. Like, it was two laps of 750. And I just remember that whole first lap, I had to go through panic attack after panic attack, you know, my head, and calm myself down before I finally got going in the second lap, you know. So it was tough.
So, and are you allowed to have someone with you to help sight because you're on your back?
Yeah. So, I mean, otherwise I'm going to have to turn around the whole time to see. I'm allowed to have a guy. So I just have a person swimming behind me. Sometimes I even ask like a lifeguard in the water to just follow me and keep my line for me, you know. So, but yeah, it's literally just to keep my line for me, basically. So he just taps my feet like a rudder to make sure I keep going straight if I do go off course. You know, so.
Now, out of the water, there's got to be some different things. I didn't even think about the inability to cough sufficiently enough to make sure the water doesn't stay in your throat. But also sweating is also an issue for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think that it's all these things that guys don't know about quads. They, you know, a lot of people see wheelchairs, and with your para quad, they just see the same thing. A lot of them don't understand quads. They think that your quads can only move their heads. But I mean, two of the big things in sport for us, biggest one is not sweating when it's hot, so you can overheat and it's dangerous. And then the other one is that our BP doesn't go up. So blood pressure doesn't go up. So, I mean, we've got extremely low blood pressure. So if I have a good day, then I'm 90 over 60. That's my BP.
Wow. Know?
But many times, if it's hot days, like I remember in rehab, and like there was a period before Paralympics in 2012 that I had to BP every day I mean, some days I was sitting at 80 over 45, stuff like that. I mean, you're like dizzy all the time, you know. So, I mean, there's ways of fixing it, and guys wear braces around their stomachs, etc. But, you know, that's just something you have to deal with when you're racing.
Wow. All right, well, so let's get into some of your highlights, man. It's hard to brag about yourself, but I'll do it for you. You've represented your country in four different sporting events: wheelchair rugby, cycling, triathlon, and it says athletics. What's athletics mean? That's not really an American term.
Yeah, so athletics is really wheelchair racing. But I mean, it's the run part.
Okay,
so
I got you.
And on the road, marathon.
Gotcha. All right, so you're also a 2012 Paralympian, current double world champion in paracycling, the world record holder in the 10,000 meters on the track, multiple African record holder, and winner of the Berlin Marathon for the fourth year in a row. That's got to be cool.
Yeah, and I must tell you, look, the most amazing achievement for me was becoming the first quad in history ever to do Ironman, and that can never be taken away, you know, never. And that first quad, my disability class and the quad class above me, I beat those guys to it, you know. So I've had incredible last 2-3 years. But I mean, this year especially, amazing. I broke 6 African records on the track. I broke the world record in the 10,000 meters. I won 4 marathons.
What's your marathon time?
So my PB is 2:28.04. I'm just under 5 minutes away from the world record.
Wow.
But yeah, I believe I've got it, you know, I can do it, but everything needs to play with me on the day. The 5 minutes is not the issue for me, you know. If I break that record, our world record's 2:23.08. My plan is not to break it. My plan is to break it quite a lot.
Right.
So I really believe I can do it. I just need to be on the right course with the right weather. So every marathon I go for now is for that record.
You know? Good. Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't bet against you going from 51 minutes to getting dressed to 2:40.
Down the bike, I mean, this year I'm unbeaten. Nobody's beaten me this year. I've got 6 golds out of 2 World Cups and the World Champs in the time trial on the road race. It's just been an incredibly blessed year, you know. So, and then obviously I finished my 3rd Ironman. So it's just so special.
So I know you did Ironman Western Australia. Have you done the same course multiple times or different courses?
Yeah, I chose that course the first time because the bike is flat. And as a quad with no triceps, we don't gain down a downhill. What we lose going up an uphill. You know, it was just the right course. And I mean, even though it was hot, I've got ways to cool myself down, etc. But it wasn't that hot. So ever since then, with the other sports, it's always difficult to choose again a course that's fitting during the year with the other sports that I race for my country, where the Ironman Western Australia falls in the end of the year after everything, and then you can take a bit of a rest afterwards. So it just falls the right time of the year. So it's always been on that one.
We want to bring out some more numbers. What is your fastest Ironman time? Again, that's a 2.4 mile swim, 112 on the bike, and a full marathon, 26.2 miles. What is your full Ironman fastest time?
Oh, that's 13 hours and 24 minutes.
I am about 24 minutes faster than you. That's it. But I'm 24 minutes faster than someone like you. I'm okay with that. I'm good. That is so fast.
Every person, you know, has their own goals. Remember, I'm a professional athlete. You know, to be really honest, that was the year when I broke my forearm. You know, so I believe that I can do a sub 12 hour, definitely sub 12 and a half.
Wow.
It's just two attempts. This year, the weather was horrific with wind and chaos, everything on the day. And last year, I had a slow punch on the back wheel, which I didn't realize because you've got 2 wheels at the back. So I just thought I blew because I went so hard.
Right.
And then by the time I got to the run, I was going fine again, so I couldn't understand. And then we saw it get completely flat.
Yeah, anyway, you get a flat, you're not really, you could have all the strength in the world. You're not going to fight that flat tire.
You know, and if it was the front tire, I would have known. But because it was the back and a slow puncher, I just gradually got slower and slower. And I thought it was just me, you know. So anyway, you know, that's sport for you, you know, and that's an amazing thing, you know. So, but yeah, 13 hours, 24.
That's an amazing time, Peter. That's an amazing time. So let's talk about this. You're talking about heat, you're talking about hills and wind, but there's other challenges within the sport. You're talking about some discrimination against some para athletes.
Yeah, look, specifically Tetris. I would include the quad class above me and ourselves, but especially like us. What it comes down to is, for instance, there's maybe not as many guys competing in our class, but in cycling this year, there was the same amount of guys competing in H1. Then there was competing in the H5 class. Now, those are the big boys. Aaron Swindake is a good friend of mine, Alex and Nadi. But, you know, the point is there was equal amount of people.
Okay.
But our class, suddenly, after being in the program for Paralympics for 2 years, there was some administration issue. It wasn't the previous Paralympics. So the class only got split between the two quad classes in cycling after Paralympics last time. Suddenly now, we're not at the Paralympics anymore.
Oh, wow.
So cycling is not happening for us. So we spent all our time and effort, and country spent money on all of us going to all the World Cups and got so excited about it, and suddenly they kick us out. And then if you go look at some of the other classes and how they work, etc., there's just absolutely no reason why, you know. I understand there's administration behind it, but, you know, it's just like they don't really care. You know, well, that's how it feels. You know, I know they do, but that's how it feels for me, you know.
Any reason given or any thought? Or
look, I mean, they say there was administrative issue from the UCI side, and that's why the IPC doesn't accept our category yet. But they should have sorted that out ages ago, and they right. could have sorted it out now, and it was in the program. So why do we need to change it? You know, so, but I mean, then things like the IPC, which is the International Paralympic Committee, on the track, the guys doing endurance events in a track chair and marathons in my class D51, there isn't that many of us. And there is no marathon at the Paralympics, although up till 2004, all the events for us was there. But now, you know, the events anymore. But even though there's less people, if you look at the standard of my racing on my own, for instance, even though there might only be five guys or six guys that races marathons during the year, if you look at the standard of our racing, it's right up there, or at least I know my times are right up there. If you compare my distance from the world record to the big boys, then to be honest, in the last 2 years, I would be second. Marcel Hoog would be the only guy who compared from the world record had passed the marathon during the year, you know. So, I mean, the big thing is just they need to start realizing, I think they're missing a trick here, that Paralympics is really about the guys that go out and do it against all odds, worst disability, worst physical impairment, and they just don't care, you know. You know, that for me is sad.
I hope that gets resolved, because that should be the actual spirit of what those games are all about.
Exactly, you know. Again, that's my opinion, you know. It's just, I don't hate them. They're doing an amazing job for the sport and getting exposure. You know, so well done to IPC. I mean, it's incredible what they've done.
Well, what's on the horizon? Where are you now? We know where you are in terms of on the course. What other things are you doing to be an ambassador? Where are you working now? I've seen some pictures of you online visiting some other people who are in the same spot.
Yeah, look, I mean, I work. I'm an actuarial analyst at Deloitte, and I've been there for 10 years. And I mean, I now work 3/4 days, so we spend about 6 hours a day at the office. My company sponsors me as well. They're my biggest sponsor, to be honest. The support I get, you know, it's more like a family than a workplace, you know, and the team I work with, etc. It's just incredible.
Good.
And then, yeah, definitely, I try and go out to rehabs, you know, as much as I can when there is quads at the different rehabs and people ask me for help. I try and help them. I have to say, after the Ironman, I've had so many people from all across the world, from America, Europe, Ireland, Japan, wherever, you know, contact me because they saw a video here or there, and then I say I'm independent and they want to know how you do this and that. And that's how I started making a lot of videos on YouTube. You know, hopefully I'm just helping as much as I can. You know, then I'm an ambassador for the Wings for Life World Run. I don't know if you've heard about it.
I saw the website, yep.
So, but yeah, you know, so I've been an ambassador for it started 2 years ago. Just an incredible race to be part of. You know, it's a race that happens at the same time across the whole world. And it's for spinal cord research.
Right.
And yeah, it's just incredible being part of that. You know, that's sort of what I keep myself busy with. I'm married. We've got two border collies. Keeps us busy.
Good. Well, I just want to make sure I get that website out there. It's wingsforlife.com, and they really work for spinal cord injury research and helping some people who are dealing with spinal cord injury. So again, that's wingsforlife.com. They have some auctions on there, and you can donate on the website, or of course they do their walk run.
Yes, yeah, and that's actually next year on 8 May 2016.
Well, I wish you the best luck. If you want to follow his story and his journey, Peter Dupria, his Twitter handle is SupaPete. That's SupaPiet on Twitter. And again, that the website that he works with is Wings for Life. You can check him out online, wingsforlife.com. All right, so the end of an episode, which is a pint, and how was that home brew that you were drinking? Is that all right?
Yeah, it was a blonde. I don't know if you guys call it that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's very nice, so. I'll definitely let my friend know he can carry on bringing me somewhere.
So each episode is a pint, but before we leave, we have parting shots. So if there was any advice you'd give to a PT or a PT student going out to work with some tetras or paras, what's one piece of advice that you'd want to make sure that physio or that PT had in their head before they came to work with someone like you?
My best advice would be, you know, it's totally understandable that you don't know exactly what this person has and how he can actually use it. But don't limit your mind. I think that's the important thing for me. You know, if the guy wants to try something, let him try it. You know, don't think that it's just not possible. Just have an open mind. I think that's the important thing. And the key, a very important thing, I think, is sharing your knowledge. You know, because I think that, I don't know if in America, but I think a lot of times here, the knowledge isn't shared or passed on really enough. If you know, if you've dealt with a quad and that guy hasn't, there's a lot of key things. And I mean, technology these days, videos and those stuff. So having an open mind and sharing the knowledge.
Well, I think just this podcast episode, you're gonna be heard all across the U.S. and we've been heard in 34 countries as of right now. And hopefully they're hearing your story and they'll be inspired by it and try some different things out. And as you said, keep that open mind.
Great stuff, man. But thanks a lot as well. I mean, it's been really enjoyable talking to you. It helps and makes a difference.
I want to talk to you again. I want to hear more along your journey. Maybe we'll catch up again and have another home brew on another episode.
No, that'll be great, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Peter Dupria, again, on Twitter at SupaPete. That's SupaPiet. Peter Dupria, thanks again for taking some time out and talking to us on the PT Podcast.
Awesome, man. And doing a great job. Keep going. Thanks, man.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pintcast and online at ptpintcast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all. The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.